love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam, hands-free, from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the sixth round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Miami Grand Prix. And to do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
Conflicted, Mr. Billington. Conflicted, because on the one hand, we had the Miami Grand Prix, and as we know from the preview to the Grand Prix, which you and I were there for, we weren't really looking forward to it too much for many obvious reasons. And we're on the back of the weekend now, and we've had the best Grand Prix of the season. Which admittedly is a low bar to potentially get over. Bahrain is only the real competition in my mind in terms of good hardcore racing. But still, it's a weird sentence to say out loud, and I don't like saying it.
Yeah, It's a Grand Prix that's had a lot to offer, I think is a fair statement to make about it. It's a weekend that certainly exceeded our expectations, however limited they were. We'll get into those expectations and the limits of them and how this Grand Prix weekend may have exceeded them after we've done a little bit of news. And we'll start with the fact that Max has become a father. Somewhere around Thursday, Kelly Piquet gave birth to a second daughter, Lily. Max wasn't in Miami for the media day. Heaven for him. And he then flew out afterwards to join the team on Friday, ready for qualifying for the sprint race. And good news for him, I suppose. Happy.
Fernando Alonso has said that he looks forward to racing her in about 16 years' time, which is about as much Fernando Alonso as Fernando Alonso can be, and we love him for it.
I mean, 16 years' time is a perfect thing to link us into the next piece of news, which is the fact that the Miami Grand Prix has got a contract extension. We'll be racing around the Hard Rock Stadium until 2041. Andrea Kimi Antonelli will turn 35 that year. Alonso will be 59. Just to put this into contrast and a bit of clarity, Australia is until 2037, Bahrain 2036, Madrid 2035. We haven't been there yet. It looks shit still. Silverstone and Monza 2034, Hungary, Qatar and Vegas 2032, Monaco, Saudi and Canada 2031, Belgium until 2031, but without 2028 or 2030 appearing, Austria, Sao Paulo, China and Abu Dhabi until 2030, Japan until 2029, Mexico and Singapore until 2028, Austin, Baku, Barcelona and the Netherlands 2026, and Imola, which is the next race we'll go to, only has a contract extending this year. So this is one of the longest contracts we have ever seen handed out to a circuit, and thank God it provided at least something this weekend.
First time out of what? This is our fourth trip to Miami, so one in four races is good by that logic so far, and I don't have high hopes for future ones. 16 years is insane. Like I mentioned, in terms of racing, it's not a brilliant circuit, and I was thinking about last night, and the closest thing I can think or compare it to is I very much enjoy Mario Kart, but you don't put Formula One cars on a Mario Kart circuit. Sure, it's entertaining and a bit amusing for the opening couple of laps, but it's not what's meant to happen. And Miami does feel a little bit Mario Kart. It's just odd. And on the one hand, I can understand why they've done it. It's good for fans attending and the local economy, which, let's face it, might need it soon. But it's on an already stacked calendar. It's going to wear everyone else down a bit. And it's going to be interesting to see how the viewing figures in the US and around the world develop for Miami Grand Prix as time goes on. Circuits like Spa, they struggle to get contract extension, like you say. There's even a gap in some years, despite their significance within the sport, like we were talking about briefly last week with regards to Mexico. It's interesting that that got extended even further, even when there isn't Perez on the grid. But Miami, it does bring in a lot of money, just shy of $800 million to the area in 2022 and 2023 combined. So business-wise, it makes sense. Racing-wise, the last few years, not really. You only had 45 overtakes in 2022 and 41 last year. This year, as we say, has maybe exceeded her expectations, but it's more a case of holy Christ, they were low. So it all just comes across more as a marketing exercise rather than something that'll benefit the pure sporting side of the sport. It's one of the things where, in my mind, I'd be able to live with it a little bit more if some of the profits that F1 got from Miami was used for keeping other circuits maybe on the calendar. Like, it helps them out a little bit for the sake of integrity and history and significance. You'd help out Spa that way. But I highly doubt that's what's happening, or if that would ever be even done. And sure, if you're just there for the racing, you don't have to attend and you can just watch the race from home as I do, but that's not necessarily how I want to consume my favorite sport, especially when other racing series don't make me do it that way. So it's an odd one. It is bloody typical that we then got a good Grand Prix out of it this weekend to really muddy the waters a bit more.
Yeah, I don't think on a business sense, while it would be nice to see Formula One sort of apply fairer costs to other circuits and locations to host Grand Prix, I don't think that it'd be good
It's
business.
not going to happen.
No, you couldn't simply take money from another circuit and say, "Oh, by the way, we're going to use this to sort of soften the blow for another circuit." You go, "So why the hell are you charging me so much if you're just going to go and do that? Why not make it more palatable across the board?"
I'll channel Wayne and Bernie Eccleston and then just go mind your own bloody business.
I mean, that would be a fair answer, but it's one of those things that Formula One operates as a business first and foremost at the moment, and then a sport second, or a business first and foremost, an entertainment form second, and then a sport third, it
Well,
seems.
that's where it goes wrong as well, but
And
that's a separate conversation.
yeah, as a pure sporting enthusiast, it's tricky to sometimes come to personal terms with that as the scenario, but ultimately that is the clean and dry fact of how Formula One is run these days. And you can whinge and moan about it as much as you like, but unfortunately that is not going to change. Capitalism exists and we live in the Western society. That's not what this podcast's about. The point is that I don't know what the point is. It just with
We
the
need different billionaires in charge.
We need different billionaires in charge, or perhaps not billionaires in charge, but also Sebastian Vettel, when he first came to Miami, I think it was, famously wore the t-shirt that said 2060 Miami Grand Prix, the first underwater Grand Prix.
And
And
we almost got that this weekend.
yeah, and it does beg the question, like, on the one hand, he was taking a bit of a mickey out
There's a
of the
suitably morbid
contract.
silver lining. We might not make it till 2041 in Miami because it might not be there by then, so the contract doesn't matter.
Yeah, it might not be there. Florida might have seceded itself from the United States to seek independence. There's a whole variety of things that could likely happen depending on how well someone is told to understand the Declaration of Independence for the country over which they rule. But that's again not the argument we're making. It's one of those
It's just
baffling
such a
things that throws me
stupendously
for a loop.
long extension. When you look at Silverstone and Australia, and you go, oh, we're happy they're on there for a while. They're important. Da, 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 da. They balance the business and the history of it very nicely. And then you go Miami and you go,
Why? Yeah, it's.
aside from here's a big bag of money, why are we here?
Yeah, and it's great for sponsors. It has a lot of fan activation zones. It is
Can we build an actual marina at least? Do
great.
something.
Give it enough time, eventually the marina will be there. But the.
It's this like Soviet style marina. We don't bring if we don't build marina comes to us.
You, yeah, it's. I think the reason that it's got this long extension, or I think the reason that a lot of people have come away from this weekend going, "Oh, actually, I don't mind it having an extension till 2041," is something I call end of season rules, which is where you have this slightly chaotic season as a set of technical regulations come to a close. Look at what happened in 2021. We had an absolute bonza of a season. And while it was pretty much exclusively two drivers constantly topping the rostrum, bar Daniel Ricciardo and Monza, it was actually an exciting season because so many of the teams had developed so closely together that the racing we got on track was really good. And we're starting to see that roll out through this season. Look at where Williams are now currently against Ferrari. Look at the fact that on certain circuits, the RB is really right up there. Look at the fact that the Haas can sometimes compete with things. But we've got five teams duking it out at the top end of this field. And we've got this sort of level of excitement that we haven't seen for the past few seasons. Think about how dull 2022
Beer goggles.
and 3 were. And we've sort of now got the sort of
Convergence.
convergence, to steal a joke from biology, everything becomes crab. which is the fact that crabs have evolved five separate times
Don't
since.
worry, I've heard the joke before, don't worry.
But this idea of convergent evolution of all the cars have come closer together, and that gives us an exciting season. And it's great for F1 to go, well, wasn't that exciting? What if we came here for another 16 years? You sort of go, oh, yeah, that was great. And then you've just got to remember that next year, when Mercedes come out with an absolute firecracker of an engine and a really well-designed car, and we go back to George Russell winning 27 out of the 30 races in a season, we'll go, oh, this was not quite as exciting as I wanted it to be. So it's one of those things that, on the face of it, seems like really good news, needs to be taken with a huge pinch of salt. And also, bear in mind, you have to ask, like you did, the question, why the hell are we going here for another 16 years? And yeah, there's a lot more to this story than the.
I'm almost not annoyed at Mexico now for getting such an extension, but I'm there going, no, I'm still annoyed at you, but you're just less in trouble.
Yeah, I'll get to you later. I'm annoyed at him now. But anyway, that's by the by. We've also got some sad news to add into the final part of this news section, which is the fact that Jochen Mass has sadly passed away yesterday, I believe it was, following complications as a result of a stroke he had back in February. And great shame, actually. He's a really sound guy and always up for a chat whenever I'd met him a couple of times at Goodwood for motorsport events, and just really nice guy. Won a Grand Prix, I think it was 1975 Spanish Grand Prix. He won, possibly driving for McLaren off the top of my head. Then won Le Mans. I think his co-driver for that year was Stefan Beloff. Again, I can't remember names and years off the top of my head, but just a really nice guy and
You
someone
can,
who,
you just don't know if they're accurate.
yeah, I can remember names and dates. I don't know if they're the correct names and dates. But yeah, he's a man who wholeheartedly encompassed the optimism and joy of motorsport and brought that as an infectious spirit to every event he attended, and always had something to say, always had a smile, a handshake, and sort of a cheery greeting. And I think, yeah, the motorsport events I often find myself attending will be a sadder place for his missing. But that is the sad passing of Jochen Mass. We'll move then into the sad passing of Lando Norris's championship hopes as we get into our review from the Miami Grand Prix.
Sad. Not sad.
Certainly the passing of the chance that,
Verstappen and Piastri going through Norris and not letting him get
yeah,
out into the lead. Segue.
there's a segue in it there somewhere. We'll start, as we should do, with McLaren, who are currently still leading the team's championship. They've got a healthy margin over Mercedes behind them now. Norris qualified second, Piastri qualified fourth, with Norris finishing second and Piastri finishing first. And yeah, twice in a row for Lando getting a win in Miami from the safety car, obviously with the sprint race on Saturday. Great launch from Oscar and prime driving within the rules, though, to get that turn one in the sprint race. It was absolutely what you want to see from a driver that's going for a championship run. And yeah, I think by the end of the weekend, this was the most dominant 1-2 for McLaren since the 2007 Monaco Grand Prix, where Alonso led Hamilton home by 4.095 seconds. And then Felipe Massa, 1 minute and 9 seconds behind in the Ferrari, the only other car on the lead lap. This weekend, Russell was 37.644 seconds off the lead, or 33.014 off Norris. It's also the first three in a row from a McLaren driver since Mika Häkkinen in 1997, 1998 with Jerez, and then as the final round in 97 in Melbourne and São Paulo, the opening two rounds in 1998. Piastri also now
First
outranks.
in my lifetime, McLaren have managed this.
No, a second time in my lifetime, just. Jerez happened, I think, on my birthday weekend that year. Piastri now
You
outranks.
cursed them for how many years?
27. But yeah, Piastri now outranks Lando for career wins and joins Max, Lewis, and Nico as the only drivers to do three wins
Did
back to back
enjoy that.
in the turbo hybrid era. Max had the better start than Lando, but Lando puts the pressure on him well in the early sector. But the problem with criticizing that moment now is saying, oh, he should have waited. The McLaren is so much faster, he could have passed easier later on. That's the benefit of hindsight, is the fact that knowing that Lando should have just stuck with Max and passed him at a better point in that opening stint. Yeah, we didn't know at that point, and also given how vastly different the track was by the Grand Prix compared to previous points in the weekend, it'd been washed totally clean by the rain. There'd been no chance for it to be rubbered in by F1 Academy, as Timo and I were discussing before we went live, which was cancelled and had a second race cancelled. And meanwhile, Miami's streak of no pole sitter ever winning rolls on. Meanwhile, Piastri just absolutely, simply lovely, really, for him.
Yeah, Norris kind of did on Saturday what he'd hoped to do on Sunday, which is not the way around you want to do that, really. Second year in a row, as you mentioned, that he won in Miami with the help from a safety car. Piastri was the driver in this case and got screwed over by said safety car, which McLaren's going to win. McLaren's going to get through. This seems to be the way it was. Piastri now has more Grand Prix victories than Norris. It's just a very nice sentence to say. And it's just interesting, isn't it? Because McLaren have the fastest car, as we know. And as you say, if Norris.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
Had been more patient, he might have been able to get past Verstappen and control the Grand Prix. I love the fact that his race engineer was talking through how Piastri, you know, his less experienced younger teammate, overtook him. It comes across a bit, definitely the Grand Prix, as Norris feels like he needs to rush past Verstappen as quickly as possible instead of just biding his time a little bit. I mean, Piastri, he dodged and weaved and kind of felt things out a bit and knew that he was in the fastest car, he didn't lose his cool, and that at some point he was going to get past him. And if he couldn't get past him on track, they'd try it in the pit lane. And I just love the difference in approaches there and how that's really serving Piastri compared to Norris. Norris saying post-race that you either don't overtake Verstappen or you crash. And I was looking at Piastri as he was saying all of this, and Piastri's got this little look on his face that goes, "There is a third option. You can just get past him." Because that's what I did. It's just really, really interesting to see how both drivers are handling it. And I think Piastri is once again perfectly demonstrating that nothing is guaranteed past this year. You might have a 2016 McLaren next year, for all you know. And if that's the case, you ain't getting anything really. So you've got to make hay while the sun shines. And if you panic, you get a bit too overexcited, if you kind of only have the same two tools to try and attack Verstappen, then that's not going to do anything. You need to be on the ball and make as few mistakes as possible. And Piastri is definitely the better of the two of them and is proving it and has extended his championship lead. I mean, if he DNFs now in Imola, Norris has to finish first or second to overtake him in the standings because third place will not do it. He'll still be a point behind him if my math is correct. And the fact that we're already there is just a little bit balmy, but I'm very much here for it because it's just nice to see Piastri there. You're shaking your head, and I've got my math slightly wrong.
No, your math is correct. The gap between Norris and Piastri is 16 points. Piastri is on
16.
131, Norris is on 115. So what's that? Norris needs to finish essentially on the podium if Piastri doesn't, to stand any chance of gaining a lead.
But the third step won't be enough. You
Yeah,
can't rely
third
on fastest lap.
15, is it? Yeah. So it's first or second, and Piastri in the kitty litter somewhere for Norris to even stand a chance at the moment. And Verstappen somehow yet to even crack triple figures. He's on 99 points.
Only just though, 99.
Only just, but worryingly, Russell isn't actually all that far off the back of him on 93. And bear in mind that Verstappen very clearly and publicly has admitted that there is a performance clause in his contract that states that if he drops below third, because of the car isn't there, if the team drops below third because the car isn't there.
He's waiting for Canada to help me out a little bit. That's all he's doing. He's been a good lad.
He is, because obviously at the start of the year we laid down our season-long predictions, and one of the predictions I asked was, when will Max's baby be born? Ellie Mae said Miami Grand Prix. The general public voted between rounds 5 and 6. My girlfriend said Reserve of Miami. Fraser said between Jeddah and Miami. Jenny Craig, Miami. Catherine Bruce, Miami. Interestingly, pretty much bar Fraser, all the women we interviewed got it absolutely on the money. But there we go.
Think
You
of that what you will.
did say that Canada
Russell, Canada.
and Max has a bad season up to that point and then retires.
Which, by his standards, is a bad season.
Yeah, by his standards, P4 and below is a bad season. So we could get to that. But I think when it comes to the way the McLarens race, I'm going to steal something from my notes on the Red Bull section, which is that while Max's form is still clinical, it's his awareness of how others race and where he can push that really shows the difference. He knows Norris and he knows he can bully him on track to his advantage. But when it comes to Piastri, he's either still learning a little bit as to how Piastri races, and also knows that Oscar doesn't care if they both end up in the wall. So he's piecing together how he actually races against a guy that's as nihilistic as he is, because there's no...
Well, this is the thing. I'll skip ahead because, I mean, why not? While we're here, we might as well get into it with Red Bull. We'll get back to it in a minute. But like you say, it's so fascinating to what Verstappen taking on Norris versus the approach he takes to taking on Piastri, because I think with Piastri, he recognises kind of games his game. And he knows that there's a little bit of that uncertainty and kind of, oh, you want to go to the edge? I'll go to the edge with you and we'll see what happens. And he's like, oh no, it's Lewis from 21, but in orange. What are we doing? And it's just really, really interesting because he's not had that for ages. Charles was obviously very close in combat in 22 when he was fighting him, but he never really pushed it to over the limit. It was kind of just... Rosberg and Hamilton 2014 Bahrain was their style of combat with each other. It was close, but we're not going to risk it. And no one else has really been able to come near him. Norris has had one fight with him, really, in terms of close combat, and that was Austria last year, and we know how that went. Ever since, it's just been unknown quantities, and it was like fighting Antonelli back in Bahrain this year. It didn't last long, but we didn't know what to expect because we'd never seen it before. And like you say, he's still learning a little bit with Piastri, but Piastri, like you say, he goes, well, I'm here to win. If I can't win, what's the point coming second? I might as well just crash as well then. And if that's what we've got to do, that's what we've got to do. And I'll dust myself down and we'll go again next time out. And it does feel a little bit, in terms of how Verstappen was battling Norris, that it almost felt like Verstappen was Piastri's teammate and being the number two driver and backing him up. Because obviously, every time Norris couldn't get past him, you'd add another second to Piastri's lead. You'd be like, Jesus Christ, he's 9 seconds ahead, 10 seconds, 11 seconds ahead. How has he managed to do this? Because obviously, yeah, the battling's there, but Piastri's still not making any mistakes. And it just would amuse me if that's some... I joked it'd be funny seeing Verstappen and Piastri after the race and just shaking hands. There's just a crisp £5 note in Verstappen's hand going, thank you very much. I'll help you out where I can, old friend.
Yeah, it's one of those things of Piastri is so clinical when it comes to racing. It's really impressive to watch, especially once he knows that Piastri understands this car and this style of racing. He understands that you need to get into clean air. So you have to make an absolute audacious send to get into that clean air. Because as soon as you do, you can just sod off into the distance. We saw him do that. We saw him pull out that huge gap. And we saw a similar sort of behavior when he was coming up behind Lewis Hamilton after the pit stops in Saudi Arabia. He knew he needed to be in clean air. He knew he needed to be running clean and fast, because that's the best way to achieve the most lap time from these cars.
And he just absolutely yeeted himself past him in a way that you go, Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne.
We saw him do the same when it came to Verstappen. It was a case of, look, I've seen how you defend into turn one a couple of times. I don't need to be told a third time. And just anchors him and just forces him to go really long on the brakes. And that doesn't work because he knows the Red Bull suffers on the brakes. And is able to make the pass. And it's great because you can see that Piastri is able to learn lap after lap. When it comes to Norris, and I've said this before,
so you've got the flip of that.
He won't learn. Norris was...
It's exactly like Hamilton in Saudi Arabia and then Antonelli and Verstappen this time. You know that and expect that he's going to get past them at some point, but it's really fascinating to see how long it's taking him to do it. Saudi with Hamilton was just amusing because you go, there's no way that Hamilton's going to be able to keep him behind for the duration of the Grand Prix, but oh my God, how is he keeping behind for this long already? He should know from yesteryear. And then Antonelli again. It's Antonelli. He might be the next Wonder Kid and all the rest of it, but he's only in his sixth Grand Prix. You've been here for 7 years. What's your excuse? And then Verstappen again. You're literally saying post-race, pre-race, all the rest of it. You know what he's going to do. He's going to do what Verstappen's going to do. So why aren't you, learning from that?
Yeah, like he was being coached over the radio from the pit wall on how to do it, and lap after lap after lap, he was doing the same
Which again,
thing.
I thought was funny because Verstappen's going to know, well, I've just seen what Piastri done. If he tries that, I'll block that because I've learned now because I'm also going to learn as I
Yeah,
go.
also paying attention, and like you've got to bear in mind the attention to detail and the way that these drivers are able to perceive what other ones do on track is sublime. A great example of this, and this is jumping forwards way to the final corner of the Grand Prix, is Carlos Sainz and Lewis Hamilton, which is Sainz knows that basically it's a Hail Mary move. It's ninth for eighth. What happens, happens. Makes an absolute send into turn 17 and thinks we'll see what happens. But he knows that Lewis has turned in early there. Like these guys know exactly how one another races. They know the racing line and they know how you'll behave and how you'll place a car to make a certain turn. And obviously, Sainz knows that Lewis has turned early to try and cut him off. And that's why he's able to basically just keep going with the send because it's two cars into one. It's a racing incident and he knows he gets away with it. And that's the thing, these drivers know, but Norris just doesn't seem to have that grander awareness of the fact that Max knows who he
He's
is.
not Fernando watching the race on the screens as he's going past.
Yeah, he's not watching it and taking it in. And I think this is where one of his big stumbling blocks is, and what's driving this sort of rift between him and Piastri is the fact that Piastri will take sort of one or two attempts just to figure it out, sound out what Verstappen's doing, figure out where he's braking, figure out where the car's weakness is, that Red Bull does not like braking, and then figure out, look, I'm just going to have to absolutely send him on the brakes then. And that's what he does. Whereas Norris just sort of lap after lap after lap keeps trying it round the outside, and just every time Verstappen just closes the door on him, closes the door on him, closes the door on him.
I've just thought of a very funny comparison. Piastri is like the raptors in Jurassic Park testing out the fencing and
Yeah.
knowing where the weaknesses are. Norris is the goat.
Yes.
Just gets demolished by the T-Rex. And
Yeah.
you're going, oh, well.
Yeah. Norris, the fact that Piastri can sort of make in two moves learn how to do it is fascinating because we saw him coming through
Of
those
a girl.
ranks and we knew he's good. And now we're sort of seeing him applying that to sort of a different aspect of racing. It's entertaining to watch. But Norris, it's not there. And I think that's the big difference between them. We've obviously mentioned Max Verstappen. We mentioned the difference in the racecraft. Obviously, the sprint is an important one to note here because it marks the first time since Belgium 2016 that Verstappen has finished pointless in a race event for Formula One. And also, messy pit stops again for Red Bull. The release in the pit lane in the sprint race into Kimi Antonelli. Antonelli does well to not be spun into his own pit crew waiting for him there. It re again brings into question just how important was Jonathan Wheatley, because this struggle cannot just be down to him not being there. Surely the team haven't just sort of forgotten how to do a safe and fast pit stop because Jonathan Wheatley's not there. What's
They've all had their little rocks dropped on their heads, and it's gone all very cartoon logic, and they've just forgotten everything.
D Jonathan Wheatley, before he left, must have put on a pair of black sunglasses and said, just look into the light for me a second. And then just left because this is ridiculous that.
Is that what Stroll's race engineers do to mark every weekend?
Yeah. How has Red Bull forgotten how to do something that they were clinical at? And they were known as like the guys that could do 0G pit
Oh, yeah,
stops,
sub
could do
2 second
distance in the
pit
dark.
stops.
They could do a sub 2 second pit stop. And now they're sort of like three and a half, and we'll release you into another car. That's it. That's all we can do. And you're sort of like, what? Yeah.
It did lead nicely as a segue to circle back to Mercedes briefly before we touch on Red Bull before we move on to everyone else. And to be honest, noted with a sprint pole, very nice. But obviously didn't pan out. Sprint race obviously didn't go his way, but did provide me with a brilliant Toto Wolff quote that I was saying to you about before we started recording, because it just sums up, I think, most people's opinions on a sprint race, and that is, it's a mini race, not relevant. It was just a beautiful piece of team radio. I loved it. And on Sunday, P6, I think, for Antonelli wasn't too shabby. I mean, again, it's almost funny that we're disappointed in some ways for him to be only in sixth, considering it's only a sixth Grand Prix. Russell, for me, though, he really is this year's Charles Leclerc from last year, isn't he? He is just hoovering up all those points. And you look back at the impressiveness of Charles Leclerc results-wise, I think He only finished outside the top 10 once last year. Russell's dangerously close to kind of repeating that if things continue. And like you say, he's not a million miles away from Verstappen. I don't know if he'd be able to catch Norris. It depends on if we get some kind of a barmy between Piastri and Norris and Norris and Verstappen at some point so that you could bridge the gap in the points to close it down a bit to make things interesting. But Russell is doing everything he needs to just be really near the action for if and when an opportunity arises. And I don't think either driver or the team as a whole are going to win championships this year. But as we saw in Austria last year, when those mistakes happen, he'll be there and he'll get a Grand Prix win. I don't think he'll really care how he wins it because he'll have won a Grand Prix and the other two competitors or other one competitor will be in the wall somewhere. And points as prizes at the end of the day. So Mercedes is doing a really, really nice job here.
When it comes to that Leclerc statistic from last year, there are one, two, three, four occasions where he does not finish a Formula One.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Event inside the top five.
I was going to say that, but I thought, no, that can't be right. It must be the top 10.
Yeah, so Canada DNFs, Austrian Sprint Race P7, Austrian Grand Prix 11th, Silverstone 14th. That's it. Everything else is a top five finish
Top
for him.
five.
That sprints and Grand Prix included, he has an average finish position that year of fourth. And yeah.
George Russell went, I'll have some of that for this year, please, and thank you. I think he's already equaled his podium tally from last year, Russell, so it's
Yeah.
brilliant.
Yeah. Russell last year was on the podium once, twice, three times, a lady, four times. Five times last year. Yeah, so Russell is doing very nicely this year. One of those times I think was a sprint race, so it doesn't particularly count. But yeah, Russell is having an absolute stonker of a year when it comes to consistency. And you look at the sort of the way his results line up: third, fourth in a sprint, third, fifth, second, fifth, fourth in a sprint, third. He's doing exactly what he needs to do. And again, when it comes to that all-important sort of average, 3.6 at the moment. It's not
If
bad.
this was Formula 2 or Formula 3, you'd put him odds on for the title.
Yes, yeah. If he's coming out with that sort of consistency, you're putting him odds on for the title. And it's exactly what I think Mercedes wants to see from him. That's why they took that gamble on him to put him into Williams and spend all those years developing him. Because he's come out and he's this absolutely sort of clean, precise.
Mercedes have weirdly nailed both ways to develop a driver of here's a kid and we're going to yeet him into a car. But also, we'll give him a bit of practice beforehand. And also, here's a driver will develop over years and years and years and years, and it both work. And Red Bull are just like, yoink, next driver, yoink, next driver, yoink, next driver, and
Yeah.
haven't been able to get make it work consistently.
Yeah, I think my points on Mercedes very much echo yours. I think super quali from Kimi, to be fair, that kid has something. And I don't think it was a case of Mercedes just pumped him full of red dye number five, shook him up and just sort of let him go. But it was a shame about his racecraft, but that will come. That will come. It's a huge jump from Formula Two to Formula One. And to be expected to do that in changeable wet conditions.
Bear in mind, 2 years ago, he was in what? Freca.
Yes, yeah, it is a
So
huge, huge jump.
we'll leave him off for a bit.
Yeah, and to get used to controlling these bigger, heavier, faster, more powerful cars on what is a car park that's soaked in water and basically very little rubber, it was going to be a challenging start for only his sixth Grand Prix weekend. And yeah, look at the fact that Oscar knows how to play the game now, and he's in his third season, so it give Kimi a bit more time. I reckon we'll see him up there by the end of this season, without a doubt. Straight back on it though for qualifying, and George's consistency is biblical. All top five finishes for the Kingsland lad, as we said. I think, yeah, it's just a season that's just going to really come together for Mercedes. I think there's nothing else to touch on really for the top three, unless you want to mention Yuki Tsunoda. He got a point. I mean,
it's an anonymous Grand Prix from really. I've got thoughts, but I need more data, so I'm going to wait a while. And also, we've got plenty of other things to talk about. So, especially with Ferrari.
Hang on. When it comes to talking about drivers' positions, you can't go on thoughts and data. You've got to get rid of them pretty much immediately as soon as there's a slight doubt, like Red Bull have done, or like Alpine are about to do.
I'm trying things differently. Call me crazy.
I'll call you crazy. Much like Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari for their very strange pit wall this weekend.
I think the good news is they had an excellent strategy in the sprint. He got up into third by the end of the race, and we all thought, much as we did in China, oh, okay, excellent. And then Sunday happened, and we all went, oh, for Christ's sake, why? But Spicy Hamilton's back, and I am absolutely loving it. He is having signed his career at Ferrari in a much shorter window, it feels. He's learning very quickly that if you want to do something at Ferrari, you're going to have to do it yourself. Tea break and should I let him pass too will become iconic team radio messages. And I'm sure Ferrari won't be too happy about that, but they've only got themselves to blame. And on top of that, Ferrari managed to then annoy Leclerc as well to essentially achieve the square root of sod all. So bloody good work, chaps. And then Fred Vasseur post-race has the balls to say, we executed it well. You executed something, but it wasn't a bloody race, and it wasn't done well. You executed your strategy and all kinds of manner of things. And it's understandable why Hamilton's a bit cheesed off, because he said, again, post-race, China, he knew he wasn't a faster car. He'll let Charles pass. It's for the team. They're at a point where they need to learn and they need to get as much as they can. So he genuinely doesn't mind doing that. He's way above kind of all kind of personal attributes when it comes to that sort of thing. But in this case, and as everyone with even a shred of common sense points out, he's on softer tyres. Even if he stays behind Leclerc for one lap, he loses some of that prime life and the heat in those tyres to really capitalise to go and hunt down Antonelli. The fact that they failed to communicate with both drivers what was going on, expected them both to carry out their orders when they've only told maybe one of them at most what their plan is, and to then swap them back again, and then swap them back again, and then wonder why you can't get to Antonelli. It's just baffling. And I'd say baffling. And yet it's not baffling because it's Ferrari. And it's just mental. But I don't think I've laughed that much at two team radio messages from any driver, let alone the same driver in the same Grand Prix in quite a while. But I was happy with T-Break. I was happy with Toto on Saturday with the mini race not relevant quote, to be honest. I was thinking, you know what, regardless of whatever else it's been, we've got a great quote out of it. But then Lewis comes out of there with one, you go, I say a T-Break while you're at it. I'm going, oh, box office. This needs to be in Drive to Survive next year. And then Sainz is 1.4 seconds behind. Should I let him pass too? Oh, we're laughing a lot at that one because we feel your pain, because we are just laughing through the tears at this point with Ferrari, but you take what you can get at this point, and while it's not where we want them, if you didn't laugh at that, you don't have a sense of humour.
Yeah, you've got to laugh, otherwise you'd cry. It was very strange, Lewis asking to be swapped, because of course you would. He's on the better tyres at that point in time.
Different strategies.
You'd let him get off and go and chase down Kimi. Makes sense. But then they sort of didn't.
Wasted three laps.
Yeah, wasted three laps, by which point the Delta was even closer. And the DRS is quite powerful around Miami. So the result was Charles just followed him, waited till his tyres got hot. And then because he's Ferrari's golden boy, went, can I have my place back? And they went, certainly. And away he
goes. But we're not going to tell Lewis about that.
Yeah, it was rough for both of them, really. Lewis very much coming into his own in the weather in the sprint. That's, again, it's one of those things that we always say, the driver makes the difference, and Lewis did when it came to the changing conditions in the sprint race. Post-rebuild as well, Charles was on it. It was obviously rough for him dropping it all the way to the grid, but it was torrential. They sent him out on Inters, which was a very strange move. And then, yeah, in the race, the tyre strategy just shook out and put them both on the same piece of track. That car demands clean air. We said it about Piastri, knowing that You need clean air to utilize the car to its best. And when it doesn't, it's an absolute heap. Charles has knowledge of how to get around that car's flaws, though, and it shows, because while he was in the dirty air, he was still able to really cling on to the back of Lewis. When Lewis was put back behind Charles, he didn't really have a lot left. Doesn't help that by that point, his mediums were pretty much dead on their feet. So, yeah.
The good thing with Lewis as well, though, is the fact that people are obviously questioning him and a number of different ways, which I don't think it is fair yet, because again, it's such a big change still after. I think we underestimate how big a change it is for him, and how even someone as capable as him is not going to be able to switch like that. It's not a sign where you're switching every couple of years and you're going to be able to get up to speed a lot quicker. He's not changed for what, 12 years or so. And I think was it the sprint race or the Grand Prix where we almost got Silverstone 2.0? With Lewis, where he's going past, I think it was one of the Williams and Albon, I thought it was, and Leclerc, and he almost managed to get both of them in the same corner. I was just like, he's very close again. I was like, I'm getting flashbacks, and Charles is maybe looking at me going, oh shit, not again. I've also had a flashback here, and he very nearly managed to get both of them. He got past Albon, that was alongside Leclerc briefly, and I just thought, yeah, he's still in there. He's not lost anything. It's just that darn Ferrari strategy, or lack thereof, hindering once again. And once he learns how to drive around that, or just simply make his own decisions. Initially, what I thought he'd done when he didn't let Charles pass him, before it turned out that Ferrari just hadn't told him what the plan was, I thought, oh, excellent, he's learned straight away. And it's like, oh, okay, well, next time he'll learn straight away. But yeah. It's going to be rough potentially in Imola if they keep this up.
I mean, we saw Sebastian Vettel making his own decisions towards the end of his career in Ferrari, and we saw that
it becomes earlier and earlier in the tenure of it.
Yeah, and then obviously he was replaced by Sainz, and Sainz sort of got around to doing that after 2 years or so, and now we're sort of six races in and we're going, Lewis is going to have to stop. It's going to be interesting as that spins out. We mentioned talking about that, the Williams cars, which of course were fighting away in the top 10 this weekend, and fighting away with good pace, actually.
On actual pace?
Yeah.
Not good luck or anything, it was just Williams.
Tale of two kitties, really, in the sprints. Superb from Alex, unfortunately then sort of penalised out of the points. I'm just straight unlucky for Carlos, with that clip on the wall just delaminating the tyre. Unlucky then for Alex with that safety car infringement. But yeah, by qualifying, both drivers had unlocked some incredible one-lap pace in the car, and then capitalised on it in the race too. Really brilliant stuff. And bar a few moments, it was a bit of a quiet one, which is what you want. A quiet race where you just get on and just drive quickly is really...
No one notices that you've got a Williams in fifth place going...
Don't notice that I'm here, please. And then, yeah, we've already mentioned Carlos's sort of Hail Mary attempt of a pass on Lewis, and...
Too ambitious for me, that one. I thought I know why he did it. Like you say, it's kind of, I can get away with it if something happens, but I just thought it's a bit too late and a good few dollars short there for me. And also, it's Lewis. If you could maybe get away with that with most other drivers on the grid, but it's Lewis. He's just been, after the day he's just had, he's not going to then go, oh yeah, no, by all means, that's a nice move. On your way, sir.
Yeah, no. You've got to wake up pretty early to send one past Lewis Hamilton, and credit for trying, at least. I think that's an important thing to bear in mind, is he gave it a shot.
I think that the nutshell for this for me is just the fact that, my word, you love to see Williams that high up on merit, and yes, long may it last.
Yeah, Williams that high up on merit is a really important thing to note, because we've got Williams, Ferrari and McLaren in the top bunch now. Like, what is this, the 1980s?
So Brundle was saying, it does feel like you're seeing Williams versus Ferrari, and then with Norris getting past the Williams earlier on the Grand Prix up and slipped down the order. It's going, what is this? It's the 80s and 90s have come back, and they're asking for their rivalries.
It's glorious to see. Meanwhile, over at Haas, Ocon qualified 9th, Behrmann qualified 20th, Behrmann would later DNF with some Ferrari reliability issues. Something to keep an eye on. Meanwhile, Ocon would come home P12, but did have a very good battle with Lewis Hamilton for a while. I don't know if you saw the footage of Barry Mueller, his race engineer, sort of wincing as Ocon took Lewis.
I appreciate that she was that committed to the fight, but even she must have known that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, even this.
That is when you get lost in the dream a bit too much and you go, oh, yeah, he is in a Haas. Oh, yes, no, my apologies. I got carried away there.
Yeah, he is your driver, so you do back him a little bit. But yeah, it was. Behrman is looking at home in that Haas, I have to say. Shame for the unsafe release because it ruined what could have been a points haul, I think, for the sprint. And then shame about his engine again. Not the only Ferrari power unit to go wrong this weekend, though, importantly. So there's something in that. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a couple of Ferrari cars taking new engines next weekend. Curious.
It was interesting because this is obviously the back end of the grid now in some ways, it seems harsh to say, but it's going to be teams where we have less to say. But Haas, it's not necessarily for bad reasons, it's just bad luck, I think.
Yeah, it's not for lack of trying.
Qualifying, he wasn't really going to be able to fight too much with all the cars ahead of him and a couple behind him that were obviously going to come past. So unfortunate that he's stuck out of the points, but as bad as it was for Behrman, kind of nice to see reliability play a factor in a Grand Prix again. It's been a while since we've had that, and it's such an obvious and iconic way of that's gone. And you just wonder, is that a little bit of a tease for next year? Obviously, it's completely different next year, but it would be nice to get a bit of reliability back because we were just so used to that being an issue when we first started watching F1 that it's not made things boring, but if you can't have close racing from the outset, at least have the option of Bahrain 2022, you've got this massive fight happening, and then all of a sudden, up goes the weasel, and both Red Bulls are out, and you've got a surprise Mercedes podium going, oh, that's really just hit things on the axis. And maybe that's not a merit, but it does spice things up a bit. And it's natural, it's not forced. It just, this does happen. And with Audi being new, with Cadillac having Ferrari engines, and obviously, if that goes a certain way, Mercedes might not be on as much. Honda have got a slightly different way of going about things. That could be quite interesting.
It begs some questions, and it was, like you said, it was nice to see like a proper, oh, that's gone, that's toast sort of engine reliability problem. Big sort of puff of smoke and flames out the exhaust sort of.
Everyone who'd watched F1 prior to like a certain year were all doing the Leonardo DiCaprio Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I've seen this one.
Scream, yeah. It was an interesting one. Again, I think Haas are very much there or thereabouts this season. And I think their overall position in sixth at the moment is, I think, a fair representation of their efforts. And they have some good weekends, they have some bad weekends. It really depends. It's very circuit and temperature and climate specific for their car. And a bit like the McLaren really enjoys a warm race, I think when we get another properly cold weekend, we're going to see an interesting result for McLaren. But the Haas seems to sort of be one of those cars that blows a bit hot and cold, and we have to figure out when it's blowing cold how to make it a bit better. But for the time being, I don't think there's anything really to floor their drivers on. They both raced really well and really gave it their all. So kudos, at least. More than can be said for Aston Martin for just generally being pants. Alonso spins in the Grand Prix on his own. He was spun out by Liam Lawson in the sprint race. Not the first of Liam Lawson's contacts with drivers this weekend. So he's just generally pants for them.
All I've written next to Aston Martin is I'll get my coat.
Yeah. Thank you for attending this weekend's Grand Prix. It was nice to have you making up the numbers.
Pretty much. Racing Bulls, which is why I'm going to disagree with you, to be honest, because I do think that whilst Lawson's incident on the Saturday was annoying, for certain, I think the one on Sunday, that was just a racing incident for me. I think it would have been interesting to see if people blamed the car in his position if it hadn't been Lawson. If it had been literally anyone else, because I wonder, because obviously he's getting a little bit of a reputation, which, yeah, maybe he does need to come down a bit. I know I said last time out after Saudi that I appreciate him trying stuff, but for me, this wasn't him trying something. This was just everyone's trying to get through turn one on lap one. He's got a Haas on his other side. He's ahead slightly, I think, at that point, and it's kind of, there's nowhere to go. They just got caught up, and it was just such a shame that it was doing on the other end of it as well, because if there's two drivers I don't want to be coming together at the moment, it's those two, because I just want them to do well because I know what they are capable of. So for me, Saturday, yeah, I'll give that one, because that was a nice risky move to make. It just didn't work, and it's a shame, but I appreciate he tried it, and it wasn't it could have been a worse crash. But Sunday, the racing incident, there wasn't any real investigation into it. So I think for once the stewards knew what they were doing. Hadjar, I wish he could have just. He was so on the bubble at the end for that 5 second gap to Sonoda, where if he'd been able to get it just under five, he'd have been able to steal a point from him, which would have been weirdly quite satisfying and funny and just amusing in the whole Red Bull narrative of this season. So it was a shame he couldn't quite manage it. But again, P11, not too shabby. I don't think they're reworked as well as most special liveries do generally. Steak supposedly had one. Couldn't tell.
Yeah, Stakes was a bit more sort of, we've said it previously with their general livery, but it was a bit more sort of Nickelodeon, you just got slimed. But for Racing Bulls, there were practical issues that were hampering them this weekend as well. Battery issues for qualifying for the main Grand Prix hampered Lawson's running, so he wasn't able to get a good run because the battery was intermittent. Hadjar close to the cutoff for Q3, so again, he's got pace, he's able to get something out of the car. I don't know what Lawson's retirement was from the Grand Prix just yet, or whether it
I
was
assumed it was the damage from doing eating into the side of him, and obviously we didn't see anything too visible, but we've seen cars retire for less after contact into a side pod.
yeah, possibly sort of like
Look
a.
back to Bahrain this year when Yuki yeeted into the side of possibly doing then as well, actually. I can't remember who he did, or one of the Aston Martin maybe of Stroll, so no one really mind, but yeah, it's a surprisingly vulnerable point of the car that you'd think they'd have a bit more reinforced, but at the same time, they just don't.
Reinforcement is weight. Weight is not speed. Yeah, it
Well,
just.
need the speed if you're just not running, so.
Yeah. Just a very interesting one. I think also there was a few sort of the more practical issues, like not having Lawson's helmet set up properly and not having the tear-offs going sort of adhered properly. So he was suffering from like condensation buildup between those layers and condensation on the inside of the helmet as a fellow helmet wearer and heavy breather. I appreciate his predicament there in the humid conditions that yeah you're going to fog up badly. But it's
He
yeah
used the little windscreen wipers on the helmet.
on the inside, yeah, it's just one of those things that's just it's those small issues that are starting to creep in, and I think they're happening across the
Again,
rest.
it's like Ferrari, as I was saying earlier in the season. You've got to focus on the fundamentals. If you can't even get those right, then what chance do you have of getting anything else right? And it's creeping into other teams now, and it's interesting which teams and which drivers, which we'll get to more in a second, but it's just interesting that things where you wouldn't even think about it normally because it's just so basic for the top tier of motorsport to not need to worry about such things, that then they are becoming issues and you're left scratching your head going, surely you're smarter than this. You should be, because if you're not, what are you doing here?
Yeah,
This
it's.
isn't kind of GB4 sort of thing where you're learning a bit. And even then, you'd be expecting mistakes more from the drivers rather than the team, because the
Expect
driver has to trust
mistakes.
the team, and the team's even in GB4 will be going, well, we gave you everything that you needed to do. That was on you, kid. Nice try. Whereas in this instance, it does feel like the shoe's on the other foot.
I mean, you said in your little note on the sort of document, pink livery didn't help. And often we joke there's sort of a curse of the special livery. I don't know if was I think Liam was running like a special helmet this weekend to match the livery. I just think that it must have come from
Explain Norris's as well. His disco ball didn't help him.
no, but I think on the practical effect of it was that it was possibly sort of thrown together too late, and that's where some of these practical issues came in. Was yeah, it's nice to have these sort of special liveries and fan activations and yada 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 for Grand Prix weekends, great. But at the end of the day, when it means that you're having to sort of send off to get another helmet made up for the new livery and a spare helmet, because you always have two, you're going to have to then get a visor fitted for it and hope that that fits properly. At one point, he was had a broken visor, and then you've got to get tear-offs fitted to it, and it's a lot, and it's one of those pressures that sort of maybe we shouldn't be focusing on doing that so much as actually just making sure the car works properly, or making sure that we can get out of the pit lane properly, which is something that impacted Alpine. Doohan qualified 14th, Gasly 18th. Doohan did not finish. Gasly finished 13th. And yeah, come the main event, Doohan gets his ducks in a row and out qualifies Pierre for the first time. Really nice. Pierre, a bit of a nowhere, doing suffering contact in T1 and a bit of a clumsy move from Lawson. But it's all a bit blef from both of them, really. worsened now by the renewed rumours that Dawson will likely Dawson Doohan will likely be swapped for Colapinto.
Really, do just read whatever is written in front of you, and even then.
No, that's written as Doohan, but the problem is the word Lawson is just above it, and also I work with a chap whose surname is Dawson, so we're sort of...
Do you want to just put your finger on the screen and just follow it?
I'll get one of those, I'll get a little ruler that I can sort of move down for each line. But yeah, Doohan likely will be swapped for Colapinto ahead of Imola, which is a shame, really, as he showed a bit of a pickup in form this weekend. But I think for the sprint, there was this weird moment where they were supposed to release them in a different order so one could get towed by t'other, but they didn't release them in the correct order. So the net result was that Doohan basically couldn't take the appropriate line to pull out of the garage, had to be pushed back, lost his
pace. He was not happy on the team radio about that, which fully justified, because you know, it's we were saying this a good few, probably every Grand Prix we've had so far this season, where it comes to Doohan, that the team always manages to find a way to less and less subtly screw him over in some way, shape or form. And then just when he gets a good qualifying session, he gets caught up in a racing incident, which is really unfortunate. And it pains me, because you've got these drivers that they're working their asses off to get there. And then I'm not saying Colapinto isn't deserving of a seat, but at the same time, in Formula 2 last year, he was fine, but he wasn't setting the world on fire. And he gets a brilliant opportunity with Williams, fair enough, and he was able to do a lot with that car. But he also managed to smash it into a good few pieces on a couple of occasions. Yeah. And the Alpine being the car that it is, I don't know what he's been able to show. Obviously, we're not privy to everything, but I don't know what he's been able to show the team that makes them think that he's going to be on top of everything immediately. And it strikes me as a bit of, as we mentioned before, the Red Bull situation. Yeah, Yuki's managing to get on top of things a little bit quicker than Lawson did. But that's sort of to be expected. He has much more experience in the car, and even then, he's still only just about breaking into the points. And that's with 4 years of experience, whereas Colapinto has got just under half a season sort of thing in different car. So even if you've tested him at Monza in a car that's a couple of years older, that's not going to guarantee you much of anything. And all you need to do is, I mean, let's say he's in for Imola. We get a rain there. We know what happens when it rains in Imola. We've got Monaco straight after. We know what happens there, rain or shine. Then we go to, Canada? Oh, look, rain again. So Spain then is maybe the first opportunity. There's probably going to be a thunderstorm now that I've said it. But you just think, three Grand Prix in a row, what do you think he's going to be able to do? Because one mistake in Monaco, you're gone.
Yeah.
One mistake in certain places, even if it's not fully wet in Canada or Imola, and you're stuck in the gravel, you're stuck in a wall, you're gone.
Yeah.
One toe, kind of one wheel on the grass, you're out of here. And Colapinto, yeah, maybe he'll prove me wrong if this happens, but I just don't see the logic in at least give... I think you need to give every driver at least one season. And if you somehow can't even be bothered to do that, you should at least give them to the summer break, because you will have been to a wide variety of circuits usually by that point. Different weather conditions, different race formats, all the kind of stuff there. Six races is ridiculous. And if it wasn't for the fact that they chopped Lawson up to two at Red Bull, you'd think it can't get any sillier than that. But Red Bull naturally like to beat people to anything and everything, even if it's not the stuff you want to be known for. So just, it's frustrating, because I think Alpine is an outfit. I don't mind Gasly as a driver. He's a nice enough guy. But in that team, and with the organization being full of certain individuals at the top that it is, it's a hard team to root for at the best of times. And now you're taking out the one kind of glimmer of hope there to put someone in who now, even with a decent fan base that he has, is going to get vilified through no fault of his own, because obviously you're going to take the seat if you're Colapinto. This isn't anything against him personally, because why wouldn't you? But at the same time, that's not helping. There's that added pressure then for him. And if he doesn't perform in, say they give him to the summer break, but he has an absolutely terrible time of it in three races, say Austria and Silverstone and Spa, they're all mixed weather condition places that things could go wrong there. And if that's anything like he did in Brazil last year, we know how that's going to go. What do you do? Do you keep him? How do you justify that? Who do you put in if you swap him back in? What do you do? And I just hope that if Lewin does leave, I'll go for my ball prediction here, we're winding over to you. Cadillac, sign him up, because that would be nice.
He deserves a better shot. I think it'd be interesting to see him get a better shot. And I
hold that's on. All I want at the end of the day for these rookies. I don't care if you get rid of them after a season. I want you to just get your season and we go, okay, fair enough, didn't work. But at least you got your chance and because you've worked for so long to get there and you've had to wait for so long. It's kind of like Drogovic. I'm not as fussed if he gets something, but I'd like him to get a seat for a season because at least you know. Same with Teo Pourchaire. It'd be great just to see what they can do. And if they can't do it, fine.
And this is the thing. While on the face of it, Bortoletto being stuck in that Sauber, while the car is pants, Bortoletto's performing at...
He's been able to do more than you'd think what other drivers would be, so you don't mind as much. You go, okay, you've got a measuring stick with each driver, with each car you've got, so you know what to expect. That's why Antonelli, it's not too surprising that he's there, but it's nice to see he's exceeding expectations in some ways, the same way that Hadjar definitely is.
And with Bortoletto, you can pace him against what Hülkenberg is able to do. Hülkenberg is a very known quantity, is a very known yardstick, and you can see that Bortoletto is pretty close to the pace of a guy that is renowned as a very good, very solid driver. So you're sort of going, okay, Bortoletto is proving that he's able to make this jump, make the step up, prove he's got the skills, so on and so forth. With Doohan, it just feels like there's been additional hurdles put in the way, and as a result, he hasn't had a fair crack at the work.
By Alpine, it's not even by anyone else. It's by his team that's supposed to support him.
Yeah, and it potentially just want to get to Colapinto, give Colapinto his six, and then hand the car over to Paul Aron, just so they can say, "Look, guys, we gave you your chance. Bye." And then just leave Paul Aron to
it. Christian Horner and Helmut Marko. Guys, you've been a bit harsh here.
Yeah,
you're rushing things a little bit. No.
We might get to see emotion from Helmut Marko over chopping a driver too soon, but I don't know.
Takes his eye out and just polishes it. It's too emotional, pops it back in.
Takes his eye out, polishes it, and applies a small tear, so when he pops it back in, it just rolls down his cheek remorsefully. But it's...
I think he'll just more look more like Blofeld if he does that.
Yeah, the streak down the cheek. Just endlessly baffled by what Alpine are likely
just
to.
When you think they can't out French themselves, they manage to find a way.
Yeah, and then we get to Sauber. Gabby showed some good pace over one lap, getting out of Q1, actually getting very close to sort of Q3 points. It looked like it's what we want to see from a driver so highly rated, earning his best qualifying position to date. More of this, please, my son. Shame he wasn't really able to capitalize on that pace in the race. Otherwise, so just another weekend of being for Kick Sauber.
Yeah, I just thought I might just stare wistfully off into the distance for this because there's really not much else to say about them.
So, with not much else to say, we move to our winners and spinners. And I have just checked my messages in absentia. We do not have a submission from Ellie May. I don't know if you do. In that case, Timo, you might as well give us your winner, please.
I say I don't have anything from Ellie May on this one, but I think she probably go for Alex Albon as well as myself. P5 in a Williams. Delicious. I don't need to say anything else. Happy days. Yeah.
Really, really good effort from him. For me, it's got to be Oscar Piastri. P4 on the grid to the win. You've got to get up early to snatch the ankles of Max Verstappen. Lovely pass on him into turn one, changing the rules of engagement, forcing him to make a move he didn't want to. That's championship driving. That's taking a four-time world champion and making him think on his feet. And if you also want to be a world champion, that's what you've got to do. So Piastri proving he's got the meatballs to do it. Spinners, Timo, we'll go for yours.
I think possibly for the second weekend in a row, Aston Martin. And the added thought here of this is how you get 007 to switch from an Aston Martin to something else in the next film if you keep carrying on like this, because he's not going to want to be seen one because of the association you plonkers have managed to do with this. Turn things around and before 2026.
Yeah, it's... When people speak about Max Verstappen possibly wanting to go to Aston Martin, you've got to look at what they're doing at the moment and think, got to be mad. He's got to have a huge belief in a project he hasn't seen yet. Like, I think the idea of Max Verstappen taking a sabbatical, seeing what Aston Martin get up to in the first sort of wave of tech regs, and then
joining Williams.
It's proved a great career path for Carlos Sainz. We can't fault him for it. yeah, it's just one of those things you sort of go, Aston Martin, what are you doing? For me, Spinner, I say this as a fan, Ferrari, a bit of an amateur hour from them with the driver swapping back and forth. The setup still isn't there. And the fact that Williams is likely going to be their rival for this season.
I think that's still a bit bold still to call that, because I'm not convinced they'll get close enough, but it's nice to be able to be that optimistic, I suppose.
They're like, Williams are lighting a fire under their bum that they would rather wish wasn't there. Let's put it that way. It's pressure from behind.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of season-long interactions, it's time for our predictions review. And
the real reason Ellie Mae didn't want to turn up tonight.
Quite possibly. No one got pole position correct. I can't remember how we...
I don't mind that, though. We were both Piastri and Norris each, and for about next time.
Yes, yeah. Ellie Mae and I were both Piastri, you were Norris. However, when it comes to the podium, you nailed the podium with this one.
Oh, I was so worried about Verstappen towards the end of the race when he's edging into Russell and going, no, stay, I can get 3 points out of this.
You called that one so perfectly. Piastri, Norris, Russell, 3 points for you. I got P1 correct and Ellie Mae got P3 correct. And then I get another point for fastest lap too, because I predicted that it would be Norris probably doing it in sort of like a hunting down sort of style, which was sort of about right. And then we get to wild predictions, and
you get a point for that as well.
I do get a point for that as well. Williams points.
Double points, to be specific.
Double points. I'm not going to double my own points for this. Timo, you predicted 9 out of 10 in the top 10. You do not get that. And Ellie Mae predicted no Ferrari engines in the top 10, which could have...
I was worried for a moment.
It was going that way.
I was worried for a moment.
It was going that way.
I was quite glad it didn't happen, because I was thinking, I'm already losing more predictions. It is the last thing I need for Ellie Mae to somehow get this random-ass wild prediction and all the Ferrari just go kaput. But fortunately, it did not happen.
Yeah, so while I do not close my gap to you, you're on 9 points, I'm on 5. Ellie Mae is on 6, so I do close my gap to her. Yeah, last week she was on 5 and I was on 2.
You know what's happened here? She's become Max Verstappen, you've turned into George Russell, and I'm somehow Oscar Piastri. Nobody saw that coming.
If that's the comparison we're making, I will take that quite happily. Meanwhile, in the fantasy world of Formula One, for Miami, Catherine's Curse, 291 points in the lead for this weekend. DTKLAS, 289 points, and Lando, 288 points. My mixing pot team came 10th. Can't Grow a Moustache, P12. On the Curbs, IndyCar, P19. And Kiwi Burners, P55 with minus 45 points, because they've probably still got Liam Lawson. Yes.
Oof. That's by itself is not helping. I think the rest of their team is also pretty terrible. That's definitely not helping.
Yeah. Overall, Lando leads 1,239 points. Big Reach, 1,163 points. And DTKLAS, 1,143 points. Can't Grow a Moustache in fourth. The Mixing Pot, P17. On the Curbs, P27. And
Arvabkracht. P55.
Yeah. There we go.
Which, interestingly, I'm obviously not doing terribly well in this section of the competition at the moment, but over in IndyCar, I've yet to properly look at how they dish out points for their fantasy league, but it was just quite amusing that, what was it, Catherine got 291 points for entire team. I had Rinus VK in my team for this weekend. He came in fourth place, and by himself, bear in mind you're allowed, I think, 5 drivers, fourth place driver got 256 points. So we have a slightly different metric by which we measure things over there, and I've not quite figured that out yet. But quite amusing that one driver probably outscored all 3 of my teams this time out in F1.
I mean, IndyCar is beautiful, and I love the fact that the Indianapolis 500 has its own point scoring system, which is really quite exciting as well. So obviously, if you win the race, you get 50 points, 40, 35, 32, 30, 28, working your way down through the top 10. You get a point if you qualify on pole. If you lead at least one lap, you get a point. Most laps led is 2, I think, is the current way it's done. It used to be Yeah, the fastest qualifying entrant will receive 12 points, second fastest will receive 11. So you also get a load of points for qualifying as well. It used to be like you'd gain points for like laps led and stuff as well. So it's a really interesting way of dishing out points. And I do quite like that one. Things get inventive. But anyway.
There's a really interesting thing, just one last thing while we're on point, because I was had a James May moment the other day when looking at Jeremy Clarkson's cost for his MOT, because I was just finding my way in the world of the Mazda MX-5 car and saw the points tally for last season and went, eh? Right, and I went and had a look. If you win a race in Mazda MX-5, you get 350 points for first position. And if you finish all the way down as low as 30th, if you're 30th or below, you still get 10. And it just increases in increments up the top there. So last year's champion, Grisham Wagner, by the end of the season had a whopping 3,770 points to their name, which baffled me slightly and made me go looking for how the hell do they apportion points in this series? And quite generously, as it turns out.
That is a very interesting way of scoring things. And a perfect, upbeat, unique, weird note to end this week's podcast on. We'll be back with a preview for the Imola Grand Prix in about a week's time, because we've got a weekend off, haven't we? So, in the meantime, Timo, where can the people find you?
Maybe a week off for F1, but it is now the month of May, so it is IndyCar full steam ahead for the entire month. So you can find me over on the Goods IndyCar, where I have a review from Alabama out from last night over with Woodsingate and Gordon. And this weekend, we're already back because we have the Sonsu Grand Prix on the Indy Street course or the Indy Road course. We've got a double header for Indy next. And then the week after that, we've got qualifying for the Indy 500 and then a bit of practice. And then obviously we have the Indy 500 itself. So be very busy there. But go look for that on the Curbs Indy card explaining all of that.
And in the meantime, if you want more from me, pick up and read the latest edition of Classic Car Weekly or subscribe to the Classic Car Weekly podcast. They're both great ways to get more of my sort of more conventional content. Otherwise, I'm all across social media at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. I think that's about all we really need to get into this week's edition of the Undercut podcast. And like I said, we will be back for a preview of the Imola Grand Prix for potentially the last time. Yet to be discovered. But anyway, we'll be back soon. We've also got Formula 2 and Formula 3 bits to come out soon as well. We've got a review of the first few rounds of those. So we'll try and get those out before Imola as well. Plenty more from the two of us.